So what we have been told is that effective January 1st, there is no more money, and any services we provide will be at our own risk. So what we have seen numbers-wise is hundreds of thousands of dollars that we will not be getting in state funding, which theoretically is a match for the federal funding we receive. So not only did it eliminate a lot of the state funding, but it puts federal funding at risk.
Because the stopgap budget ended at December 31st, so from January 1st on, you're basically paying your own way.
Correct.
So how are you handling that?
So far what we've done is we have eliminated one position. It's a very small team as it is. We have two counselors, a legal advocate, and a volunteer coordinator and a prevention educator. We also had a part-time person who kind of filled in the gaps because there are certain times where that staff is not enough. So we unfortunately had to, as of February 1st, eliminate that position, just being proactive because, you know, we are assuming we will get no money for anything after January 1st. As far as the future goes, we are talking about that every day. We're looking at our bank accounts every day and trying to figure out how we keep things going and continue all of those services and still be able to pay staff and keep the lights on. And it's very much day to day, week to week, looking at the bank accounts and trying to do our best.
Last spring during our Stretch Thin series, Hillary Pacia from the YWCA talked about how one rape victim was turned away because of the resources to help out didn't exist. This was almost a year ago. And she had said that the program to provide hospitals with clothes for survivors to wear as they were released from the hospital to go home was virtually stopped. Here's what she had to say about that.
The clothes that we have are just the clothes that we have. And so we're not able to replenish those once those are taken. So when we run out at this point, that will probably be it until the state passes a budget.
How are you with clothes for those people? And are you still offering that part of the program?
We are reliant completely on donations. So there are certain days where we don't have supplies to give to the clients or the money to pay for certain extras that we would typically try to assist them with when they're going through the aftermath of the traumatic event. So from week to week, it's based on what we have some very generous donors, both organization-wise and independently. And so from time to time, we get donations and we're able to provide those things. And otherwise, no, we are currently at a very, very minimal spending freeze. We're not buying anything that we cannot absolutely live without because we want the money there to cover staff costs because the staff are the number one thing.
And are you having to turn away victims when it comes to them asking for your help? And if so, what's the ratio of those that you're able to help versus those that you can't?
So we are still able to offer the services as far as counseling, medical, legal advocacy, those types of things. But we have had to deny requests for, you know, if they need certain supplies or medical bills that we're having trouble getting covered because those should be covered legally, but sometimes they're not. Typically, we would upfront some of those costs, and we're not able to do that right now. The other thing that has been very impacted is some of our trainings and prevention education. We would typically do any and every request. If it's an out-of-town request or if it's outside of work hours and it would take paying staff extra, we're not able to do that right now. So there have been times where we've had to, you know, not gone out and educate, which is what we know is so important. So it's kind of a case-by-case basis. We've been able to meet the immediate needs, but it's getting harder and harder. And if we continue to lose staff, that will become very impactful for the clients.
Maybe you're leading into my next question, which has to do with this juror education program that was just getting started about a year ago. The idea behind this is to provide information for jurors so they have a better idea of what it's like to be a sexual assault victim. This was just getting off the ground last spring. Where is it now, and how has the state budget situation impacted progress there?
It's a standstill. So unfortunately, we've had to just focus everything on the clients that need us in that moment. And a lot of the education and training has had to be put aside for now. And we've seen several not guilty verdicts since last year. And so we know it is so important to do that training and to just educate people on how all of this works and rape culture and just get the information out there. So unfortunately, we are still at a standstill.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern, and we're speaking with Liz German of the YWCA about some of the programs that are at risk because of the state budget situation. Let's discuss how the state budget situation is affecting one of your largest programs, and that is services to seniors. A major obstacle you've had to overcome here is that the state mandates you deliver some home care services within 14 days, but no reimbursements were coming in to cover those costs. This is what you said last spring about the financial problem that this was causing.
We're not at the point yet where we have had to use our line of credit, but we do have a line of credit, and we have gone to our board and asked for additional funds for certain things from some of our, you know, investment accounts and things that we typically would never touch because that is our stability.
How does it stand now financially?
So we are still in that position where we are mandated to provide this service. However, we are not getting reimbursement. We estimate that if we continue the rest of this fiscal year, we're looking at $700,000 to $800,000 from the state that we would be just not receiving. The reimbursement that we get is already not enough to cover the costs of running the program. So obviously, this is a huge discrepancy. And what we're, you know, talking about, unfortunately, is how much longer can we do this? So right now we have about 250 clients, seniors that we serve, and we're looking at how long can we sustain this without just eliminating the program. There is no way to make any staff costs. All staff are meeting the needs of the seniors in their homes. So there's no way to cut staff or cut overhead. It's either you do the program or you don't do the program. We obviously want to continue the program. We think it's a needed service, and we know that it prevents larger costs of seniors going into nursing homes or hospitals because they, you know, are not taken care of independently. So we are at a decision point. I think in the next month or so, we're going to have to make a decision about how long we can sustain. We have also been continuing to talk to our foundation, looking at those bank accounts and seeing what is liquid, what can we use. We do still have that line of credit option.
But you didn't have to use that a year ago.
We did not have to use it. We were able to get some money in from the state when the stopgap budget was in place, although 2 to 3 months delayed. We are still waiting for money from October and November and December for that program. We hope it will come, even though there is no budget right now. We have heard mixed news on whether or not they will cut checks for services that took place in the stopgap budget.
So we're talking about a program that involves about 90 home care aides. What you're telling me is
Correct.
That you really can't operate it with 40 or 30 or 20 and just serve some people. You either have to have it up running in full or not at all.
Correct. We have 48 hours to respond to a client and then 14 days in which to serve them. We can't say, no, we're full. We can't staff anymore. We've run out of money for payroll. We have to serve them completely or not at all. So we're at a turning point.
What's the current status of the Medivan program? Last spring, you discussed a misconception that you weren't offering the service, but you were. Is that still an issue?
I believe that the word is out that we are still offering the service. And just like home care, we've continued to offer the service. It's the same concept as far as we get paid for the, theoretically, we would get paid for the trips that we take. And that's the only part that we're staffing. So again, there is no way to cut back or cut costs. So right now we're still running it. We hope that we can continue to run it, but it is based on getting those reimbursements from the state. So it's, again, it's up for conversation on how we can continue to run the program.
You talked about in your interview from May of 2016 about how poor state funding could lead to a different community, more crime, more neglect, more issues with children. Has that panned out as you thought it might now, looking back a year?
I think what we've seen is that there are providers like YWCA and many other great providers in town of social services that have taken the responsibility on themselves to continue providing these services. So I don't believe that our community has really felt what it would be like if YWCA and others stopped these services tomorrow. You would see a huge spike in crime, child neglect calls, senior neglect calls, hospital stays, nursing home costs, welfare costs, unemployment costs, medical card costs. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And I would hope that we don't have to actually see that chaos and that result to make some decisions. But it's going to start to happen. And I think as a larger organization, we have held on a lot longer than some might be able to, considering our services. And I think you're going to start to see in the next 2 to 3 months, if nothing happens, you're going to start to see, actually feel it and see it as just a community member who maybe has no idea of the services and how important they are. Mm-hmm.